One rookie member of Congress is getting serious about bringing government waste to light. He's just released the first issue of Waste Watch. The report kicks off an ongoing series to track waste and mismanagement in government. It identifies 10 specific instances from recent times. The items total more than $117 million. Republican Steve Russell represents Oklahoma's 5th District. He said his efforts to highlight wasteful spending are inspired by a fellow Oklahoman.
We were absolutely inspired by Dr. Tom Coburn and his effort when he served in both the House and the United States Senate representing Oklahoma. He, as you know, did the annual waste book, and I wanted to continue on that legacy and really to try to do it in such a fashion where we could get it in maybe quarterly installments for the purposes of our office so that we might have a chance to impact some of the authorization and appropriation process as well.
All right, let me ask you about the process for all of this. How do you actually gather the information and who puts it all together?
Well, my staff, I have in particular Caleb Crowder, who also worked with Dr. Coburn's staff. He used to work on the waste book in his staff. We get it from many sources. I may get an item talking to a constituent. Someone calls in, may tip us off to something that they know about. Caleb Crowder has been instrumental in over the years in finding ways through GAO reports, IG reports, inspections, all kinds of things where we are able to discover, unfortunately, many of these wasteful programs.
And of course, having been a protege of those over the years, now that you are in Congress, has anything struck you that you didn't expect when you came in just a short few months ago?
I think Americans have grown to not be shocked anymore by government waste, but what I think that they still demand is that when we discover it, that we try to do something about it to correct it. I think that that's very, very important that we attempt to do those things. When we see wasteful spending, we can't just allow it or turn our head or allow it to continue even after it's been discovered.
And now the GAO just came out with its annual report on duplication and waste, and they have a number of things that they ask or suggest that Congress could do, and I'm sure you've read that. What can Congress do once the money is gone or once the program is established?
What we're doing and the things that we discovered in the Waste Watch that we issued was we're writing specific letters to the departments or agencies asking for what is their accounting of that, how are they going to prevent that spending in the future. In some cases, we can look at deliberate programs if they're tied to some authorization, and we can give them that much less for the next year. We can put language into the authorization process that specifically says that they have to cut this program, examine this program, report to Congress about the waste in this program. So there are many things that we actually can do to prevent on a particular agency from at least what we found from happening again.
And, of course, Congress has lots of fiefdoms, and there are other members and other committees that have jurisdiction or oversight of some of the programs you're citing. Will you be enlisting colleagues in that battle to try to get programs curtailed or shut down or altered?
I think one of the most classic examples that we saw when Dr. Coburn was working this effort was, the millions of dollars that would take a bridge out to basically an uninhabited area in Alaska, and the bridge to nowhere. And everyone was outraged, and you saw colleagues on both sides of the aisle rally around these egregious wasteful spendings. One example in far, far less numbers was a shooting training range where they would practice shooting inside a building and clearing a building, but it was a live fire range in Afghanistan. And the first rains that came literally melted the walls. They were not actually, solid brick. They were just mud brick. And so all of that money had been wasted. Well, now we're going back asking not only for, an audit of that, but we're asking for specifically that that contractor be banned as we try to approach the National Defense Authorization. So that is an example of how you can hold somebody to account if you get it through. And your colleagues will look at that and they'll say, yeah, this is really bad. That maybe we ought to do this.
And in the short time you've been here, have you had a chance to talk to any of the agency people, some of the agency leadership or even program managers, and taken the measure of how they react to these discoveries?
We've had a very good relationship in oversight and government reform with the Department of Justice, IG in specific, and many of the IGs who have come to oversight and government reform complaining about being able to do their jobs with their agency heads. And so in that capacity, yes, in the oversight hearings, I've been able to ask many people. I got to ask a person in the Social Security Administration in a hearing a week ago why there were 6.5 million people in the United States who were age 112 or older still on active roles in the Social Security. And, you know, you can imagine fumbling around trying to answer that one. So, yes, we have tried to reach out and also talk to people in the agencies.
My guest is Steve Russell, the new representative from the state of Oklahoma. And so what do you plan for legislative priorities? Have you formulated that idea yet?
Right now, we're working on the National Defense Authorization. I'm on the House Armed Services Committee. I'm a retired soldier. I was 21 years in the infantry. I'm a veteran of Kosovo, Kuwait, Afghanistan, and Iraq. So obviously, the defense-related things are very important to me because of the need that we have to not waste our dollars and also the mission that our men and women carry. So as we go through the National Defense Authorization, we have a couple of things we're wanting to insert in that language that will address some of these specifically.
All right. And since you mentioned earlier that like is too strong a word to say how you express about being a member of Congress now after battle duty, what is your impression of Congress? We don't often get a freshman to tell us what that's like.
Sure.
And, you know, is it as bad as people say, or is there a little bit more comity, you know, at the individual level than you might think from reading the news?
I've joked that like is a strong word, but I always follow it with I am enjoying it. It is a great honor to serve here. There are some wonderful people that serve in Congress that have remarkable backgrounds and capacity. A lot of the division that you see on the outside through the media outlets and through organizations and just the basic vitriol that Americans have for the political process, it's kind of been our tradition. That really does not exist, though, among our colleagues to the extent that people would imagine. I just returned last night from a congressional delegation to Fort Benning, Georgia, with a colleague of mine, a Democrat from Boston, Massachusetts. We've become good friends, and he commanded Marines when he was in the Marine Corps in Iraq. I commanded infantry soldiers in the Army. We have some common ground. Do we agree on everything? No. We come from fundamental differences. Our districts are fundamentally different, but we agree on a great many things, and we try to stay on that common ground and to work on those issues and actually get something done.
And just one question on the military issue that you mentioned a few minutes ago, having been in infantry and in the ground, on the ground in combat situations, what's your feeling about the A-10 Warthog?
The services are forced to make cuts because of budget constraints, and the chiefs will come in and testify, and they're really faced with the situation, okay, which do you want to cut, your thumb or your pinky? And they're like, well, I'd really rather not cut either one. But if you'll take the pinky, I can still function with my hand by retaining the thumb. And what happens is that we then, for political purposes, well, you can't cut that pinky. It's made in my district. Or my husband flies that pinky. Don't take that. And we have to listen to our service chiefs. When they come in, they are absolutely making the best recommendation for defense of the country. And I think that's what you have with the A-10. Is it a good airframe? Sure. Can it destroy tanks? Yes. But in the debate, you never hear anything about ground attack aviation in the Army and Marine Corps to fight tanks. Could the A-10 fight tanks? Yes. Can Apache helicopters and Super Cobras fight tanks? Yes. But none of that will matter if, as the Air Force is making the case, they don't have air superiority in the skies, and they need a superior fighter jet that will last us long enough that we can retain superiority in the skies. And so that's why, if given the choice between cutting pinky and thumb, they opt to keep the thumb. It's always nice to engage in thoughtful media interviews where people are just wanting to know kind of what's going on and be informed. And we welcome it as well, because half the time we're trying to explain just information that people were not aware of, and had they known, then they would not be as worked up about some issues.